Welcome to Immunize Wisely. It is November 7th, 2020, the first Saturday after the big election, which is on a lot of people's minds. My name is Ingrid Castle. I will be your host. Our websites are I'm the director of Vaccination Liberation, so I'll just go through the websites we have. Vaccinetruth.com and vaccinetruth.net, actually, where our exemption pages are housed. It's a mirror side of the exemption pages on our main website, which is VACLIB, short for vaccinationliberation.org. And I have another website, humbleweed.net, which I'm having a little bit of problems with because PayPal decided to suspend my account, and they suspended it on Vaccination Liberation too. And here I had just ordered a bunch of freedom calendars from Dan Pilas Sr., who has been doing the freedom calendar for many years. Many regular RBN listeners probably know who Dan Pilas is in Minnesota, and have gotten some of his tracks, 50s style great freedom tracks. But he's a sweetheart, and send a prayer his way. His wife of 66 years passed away on Monday, and yet he's and the memorial was today. And he is still at it, fulfilling orders for calendars. And here I ordered, 100 from him because I wanted them to be personalized for VacLib, and they will be posted on our website. It's going to be a fundraiser, and but anyway, for $20 postpaid, I will mail you a calendar. But right now, my PayPal buttons don't work, so you can always mail a check to our address at you can find it at VacLib, VACLIB.org if you want to support Vaccination Liberation. And I want to mention we do have a great news feed on republicbroadcasting.org. If you aren't a regular subscriber or donator to RBN, I would encourage you to. We are trying to phase out of our 800 number. Everyone's feeling the financial pinch. So I will be putting out a call-in number that's a non-800 number at near the end of our show. That number, just so if you want to write it down, so because I'm not going to give it out tons of times, you should write it down and just put it near your phone or computer. That's 512-248-8252. And we also have a chat room. It's that Immunize Wisely. That's Immunize Wisely. That's two Z's. The Wisely stylized to match with Immunize. And so you do Immunize Wisely together dot chat and go dot com. And I will be putting some links in there. And I want to make sure that Mer Bailey knows how much I appreciate her for hosting the chat room. Very much appreciated. And then we already talked about some of the extreme vote fraud, and I posted it in the chat room of Sally's show, vaccinefreeamerica.chatandgo.com. So you can look there too. But my guest is, as Sally mentioned, Catherine Henry. She's a constitutional attorney, a business owner, Christian wife, mother, homeschooler, vaccine choice advocate, yay. And she is the founder, most importantly, of the Restore Freedom Initiative, a constitutional amendment petition. And she has also argued recently in the Michigan Supreme Court against the governor's unconstitutional executive orders and prevailed. And more recently, on Election Day, there was a video that everyone should see, and I'll be posting a link. It's also on the home page of her website, Restore Freedom, KH, that's for Catherine Henry, restorefreedomkh.com. So just go there, and that's where you can support her work. It's a very easy-to-use website, and I'd encourage you to go there. So without any further ado, thank you, Catherine, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved? I mean, obviously, the lockdowns were pretty extreme for a lot of people. And I think especially for you being in Michigan. But you were a constitutional attorney, obviously, before this all happened. So how did you get started in, you know, becoming a constitutional attorney and just wanting to restore, you know, your state's constitution and just, you know, liberty in your state?
Well, I, it's, you know, it's definitely been a journey. I was called to run for state rep back in 2015 and 2016. And my husband and I were, we still know, we were called to have me run in that race, and I didn't win. And at the end of that time, it was really a time that I was able to hone in on some of the issues. Quite frankly, that's when I first learned about vaccine choice even being an issue, or what, you know, the discrepancies with vaccines were all about in the first place. So, yeah, it's it was really an eye-opening situation for me that, you know, to run for state rep and to have the various groups reach out to me and let me know of what their issues were. It helped me to really be able to grow in what my, you know, understanding of what our laws are and how they interplay with the constitutional provisions that are supposed to be there to restrict our government and to protect our liberties. And when that was all said and done and I didn't win that race, I had come to become friends with several people who are leaders in various liberty movements, whether it be in the law or be in a, more of like a grassroots setting or whatnot. And so I got connected with one of the nonprofit organizations that focuses on a variety of issues relating to our, you know, constitutionally protected God-given liberties. And so I'd gotten licensed to practice. I've already been licensed to practice in a couple of states, as well as in the two federal district courts that Michigan has here. But then I also added the licensure at the U.S. Supreme Court. And so I've been working on cases, filing briefs and whatnot at the United States Supreme Court for the last few years or so. But certainly when COVID-19 happened and our government's response was, you know, overwhelming to say the least, especially here in Michigan, I knew I had to do something. So from the very first week of April, I kind of hit the ground running on trying to shake some common sense back into our legislators, as well as, you know, the average everyday person who was just kind of, you know, going, what do we do? How do we stop this?
Exactly. And so you obviously have leadership capabilities because you have a lot of people supporting you and just very appreciative of you coming forward. And I'm always amazed at mothers. You know, obviously you're juggling because you're a mother first and your husband's working, right?
Yes, he definitely works.
So that's a lot to juggle. You know, you have children at home homeschooling. You obviously have an office in your home, right?
I do. My office is out of my house, yes.
Well, you'd have to with, you know, supervising three children and homeschooling, this kind of thing. And I'm like, it still keeps you spread pretty thin. So it's quite an honor for you to agree to be on the show for so long. And I invited a lot of people from Michigan to spread the word because I, you know, when we do open it up to callers, I really want to make sure that first-time callers and Michigan people call in because you have how many days to get this citizen's petition, you know, turned in?
Well, it's a 180-day rolling time frame. So in order to use every single signature we've collected since the first day, that first day was May 30th. So the 180th day to turn it in by would be actually Thanksgiving Day. So I'd have to turn it in the day before, essentially.
Okay, so you're really doing the countdown right now.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're hoping our goal has been November 13th to have all the petitions brought back or delivered back to me so that our volunteers can help to sort them all out by county, that we can look at them all, make sure things are, done appropriately. We can continue validation efforts, and then of course scanning them and preserving the record so that what we turn in to the Secretary of State, we do have in fact a full intact copy so that if they do want to suggest there's anything wrong with those signatures, we know exactly how to look at the copy of them and look at my records of, how we have validated those. We've already validated probably somewhere between 35,000 and 40,000 signatures so far.
Okay, now every state is different. Do you have to have every single county represented?
No, we actually had a state law passed in 2018 that said you had to have, you couldn't have any more than 15% of your signatures from any one congressional district. And there's 14 congressional districts here in Michigan, but that was actually ruled unconstitutional by our courts here in Michigan. So it's technically still on the books, but not something that we follow here in Michigan. You can get your signatures from anywhere. Otherwise, it was declared unconstitutional because it would otherwise disenfranchise any of the voters whose, votes essentially were beyond that 15%, that their votes wouldn't count or their signatures wouldn't count.
Right. So, which counties in Michigan right now do you feel need better coverage?
Well, we could
Or
always use more.
districts?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is by county, yeah, because that part was unconstitutional with the districts. But, Kent County is a big one. I actually live right next to Kent County. Of course, we have Wayne County and Oakland, and Macomb and Washtenaw, basically the greater Detroit area. And, unfortunately for us, we're seeing a lot of attention being focused on the election right now in that area because, well, because it's needed, because there's so much election fraud. And I'm actually going on Fox 2 Detroit tomorrow morning because I was asked to be the Republican attorney or the conservative attorney to argue against the city attorney for the city of Detroit as he defends the way things have been going over there. So at any rate, it does play a role though in the amount of attention that we can draw to our petition at this point in that area.
Right. I think everyone is reeling over the level of vote fraud at the direction of your governor for Detroit.
Yeah,
And
it's
what
amazing.
it, well, wh so yeah, I'd like you to talk about that a little bit. I mean, obviously that you aren't the only one that feels that something needs to be done. But you're focusing right now on the petition. So you only, there's some other attorneys that you know of that are working on the vote fraud aspect.
I do. I can't remember who now off the top of my head. There has been different aspects. So, for example, I want to say it was about a week ago now, maybe a little bit before, but roughly a week before the election, our Secretary of State put out this rule. Well, she put out two of them. One essentially was saying that you could not open carry a firearm in a polling precinct or within 100 feet of the door of a polling precinct, obviously directly contradicting our constitutionally protected rights to protect ourselves. But also she put out a different directive that said that poll challengers, even though they're by law in there for a reason, some for the Democrat Party, some for the Republican Party, that they had to be totally masked and they had to be 6 feet away, practice social distancing from each of the election workers. Well, if you're 6 feet away from the person and the ballot is in front of that person, how are you possibly going to be able to write down and observe everything that they're doing? So, luckily for us, the Court of Appeals ruled in favor of common sense and, freedom with regard to the Second Amendment issue. And the other issue was brought to court, but my understanding is that there was essentially a retraction of the Secretary of State of that 6-foot requirement, where they wanted the 6-foot distance between the poll workers and the poll challengers, but they understood that and acknowledged that that could not necessarily happen for the most part because, you know, needing to be able to see the ballots. So, there were systematic things happening right at the beginning that were causing a problem. And unfortunately, that continued throughout where, you know, I mean, there's just a variety of issues. But yeah, I do know some of the attorneys. We have a former senator from the Greater Detroit area, who is suing the election officials and appropriate government, personnel in Wayne County Circuit Court. That is actually being done or filed by the Great Lakes Justice Center, which I've been a part of. That's actually the nonprofit organization that I was working with on constitutional issues for the last several years. But I did not join them in this particular thing. But my understanding is that will be filed first thing Monday morning. My understanding is that the Trump administration is also going to be making additional filings first thing Monday morning as well. And I've even offered my services if the Trump administration would like to take me up on anything that's happening here in Michigan, or even all the way up to the Supreme Court, since I'm licensed at the U.S. Supreme Court as well. We need to be able to make sure voter integrity is really established. And, you know, if Biden really wins, then he wins. We can't just simply count a bunch of ballots that are being snuck in and counted inappropriately. And literally, when you have the Detroit, I forget what it's called, but the voter building in downtown Detroit, the inside, when you walk in the vestibule, in the entranceway, then you can see the rest of the building, even though you have additional doors you have to go through. And there's, I don't know, I'd want to say, it's been a while since I saw it, maybe like 15-foot ceilings. And it's floor to ceiling. I take that back. It might be like 2 feet off the floor is where the windows start. And then the windows or glass goes from that 2-foot mark all the way up to the, say, the 15-foot mark. I mean, it's just wall to wall, almost floor to ceiling. Glass to demonstrate the kind of, you know, transparency that helps with voter integrity. And yet the poll workers on the inside, once they were successful in keeping Republican poll watchers and poll challengers out, then they started taping up cardboard and other things on top of the windows so that you couldn't see what was going on inside. So that, to me, why would you do that ever in a government building, let alone in something that should be so transparent that literally they should be counting, you know, ballots basically on TV so the whole state can see that the process is being done with integrity. So at any rate, I could talk forever about the bad things that are going on here, but things are being done.
Well, we're seeing it and all over the place. A lot of people don't realize that there were hidden cameras all over the place. A lot of these buildings, there are, you know, there's always some kind of a check in those rooms. And so we've seen this feed from these cameras that are really close to these workers. And you see this worker going through the ballots. And as soon as they see Trump, he's literally crumpling up the ballot and throwing it in the trash. And then you see a bunch of other ones filling out ballots, you know, blank ballots, and they're asking for blank ballots, and they're filling them out and date stamping them. It's too weird. I've never seen this level of fraud.
Yeah, we're actually seeing too that I want to say it's in the Traverse City area here of Michigan, where the post office was actually caught red-handed putting November 2nd stamps on a whole bunch of ballots that were coming through on November 4th.
Correct. In fact, I put a link in the chat showing some of that. Yeah, the whistleblowers. So thank you for bringing that up. We have a break, so stay tuned.
after about a month of Extendivite, I don't know what it is about the circulation factor, I was able to increase the weight, increase the amount of sets I could do. It has to do with the oxygen getting to the blood. You should market this as an athletic performance. And I don't change anything about my diet or anything. I just thought, this is amazing. Bilberry extract has got something called resveratrol in it, which is the same stuff that you get from red wine. It's also good for eyesight. And I was reading that the Royal Air Force during World War II would give their pilots bilberry jam so they could have better night vision stuff. This is amazing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure?
Listening to Immunize Wisely with my guest, Catherine Henry, constitutional attorney in Michigan. And Catherine, you went through a pretty traumatizing experience on November 3rd. And I just wanted to make sure during the break if you're comfortable talking about that. And I know, you know, you don't want to keep reliving it over and over again, you know, the whole PTSD. Because, I think all of us have had some kind of trauma that's residual in their life. So, you know, share with us what you're willing to. I think it kind of also is a driving force for your, you know, petition, too. Because, after all, this shows the level of a police state where they're actually scrambling to find some law that you broke because you didn't break anything.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess I should say, to fast forward, I didn't break a single law, not one. And I didn't break a township resolution. I didn't break, you know, any kind of constitutional restriction. In fact, it was the sheriff's deputies, the prosecuting attorney, and the township clerk who were all, you know, directly violating state law, state constitution, the United States Constitution, and quite frankly, even their township resolution. So, you know, for anybody who's a visual person, you mentioned it at the beginning, but, you know, if people could go to our website, which is restorefreedomkh.com, right on that main page is a link to the video that says it all. And the video is, we were lucky enough to be able to get some clips of not only when I went live on YouTube as the incident was unfolding, but then also we were able to get various other angles and footage from just voters that were there to sign the petition. And it was quite telling. And in fact, countless people, including many, many strong grown men, have told me that in being able to watch that first even 5 minutes of this video, it brought them to tears. And it was hard for them to even watch, all the way through. So it's one of those things that it's essentially something you would never think would happen. As we mentioned, I drafted the Michigan's Restore Freedom Initiative. It's a petition to amend the state constitution, not to change the government in form or substance, but rather to get it back to the form and substance it was, where we have true governmental accountability, true governmental accessibility and transparency, and, where our fundamental liberties are actually protected the way that they were designed to be protected by the state and federal constitutions. And so, at any rate, and that's also, the whole language is also on the website if people are interested in that. So we had Election Day was kind of one of those days where we knew, we were out on primary election day and went out in full force on, general election day, and had hundreds of volunteers spread out intentionally at various precincts all around the state of Michigan. And so at one of the precincts that was about a half an hour from me, I was going down there because an individual called me, and she said, "This sheriff's deputy is threatening to arrest me if I don't leave." And I said, "Oh, no." I said, "Well, first of all, are you outside of the 100-foot requirement? Because you have to be, by state law, more than 100 feet past the doors to the polling precinct." And she said, "Oh, yes, it's marked in the ground where the 100-foot line is, and I'm well beyond that." And I said, "Okay, are you impeding traffic, or are you creating any kind of barrier so that it's harder for the voters to get to the polling precinct?" And she said, "Absolutely not." I said, "Okay." Well, I tried to talk to him on the phone, and he was really not making any sense. And so I said, "You know what? I'll just come there. I'll come there, and we'll have a discussion, and I'll bring the laws, and we'll go over this." So I decided to sit at my computer first and put into a little bit more detail about what all the laws are, primarily because the conversation I had with him. He was arguing about the wording of the laws, and I was looking at the very law he claimed to be arguing about, and it didn't have any of the words he was saying, so I didn't know what he was talking about. And so I pulled together a variety of things from the state constitution and U.S. constitution, and even from their local township ordinance and from our state statutes. And I brought it with me. I brought several copies so he could have one. If he had any partners or whatever, they could have one. All my volunteers could have one. We could just all follow along and hopefully have a very productive conversation. In the meantime, I had my my team post it to the very front page of our website so people could see that. And in fact, a link of that resource is actually in the description of the YouTube video that I'm talking about right now. And so I went down there with my 6.5-year-old child, who's homeschooled, because where else would she be if she wasn't with me? And we have four kids, but she's my only one that was with me. And so when I first arrived, I didn't even see where they were. So I drove down the very long driveway in the middle of nowhere, keep in mind. I mean, nowhere, to the point where cell phone reception is very scant. And I drove past the front door, and I thought, maybe they left. And I look around the property, didn't see anybody. Drove around to the far outskirts of the parking lot. And it wasn't until I rounded a final corner that I finally saw where they were. And I thought, oh, my goodness. They definitely are in no danger of being construed to be too close to the building. So they were even, backed up into the, into the grass. So they weren't even on the pavement. And so I backed in next to them. And so my vehicle was totally out of the way as well. And they had, the signs had been, you know, like a yard sign, right? A typical yard sign. He had told them they had to take those out of the ground because they weren't allowed to put anything in the ground, and told them they had to put their folding table away. And it was one of those skinny, tall folding tables so people could easily sign. And I said, absolutely not. And I picked it back up and I folded it back out and I put the yard signs back in the ground. They were just big signs that said, you know, Restore Freedom Initiative petition, sign here, you know, not nothing unusual for a day like that. And so he came out and he started arguing immediately, did not care to have a conversation, and just kept saying that we had to leave and that the owner of the property told us we had to leave. And I said, who do you think the owner of the property is? This is public property. It's a township. And he said, well, it's the clerk of the township. And I said, no. We the people own the public property here. And he didn't get it. He said, nope, the township owns it. So the clerk is the owner. And she says she doesn't want you here. And so you have to go. Otherwise, it's trespassing. So I tried to explain that the law was very clear, that the law said we only had to be 100 feet back. We were not in the way of any voters getting to the precinct, et cetera. I asked him multiple times to read the law. He refused to do that at all. And in fact, called out two deputies as backup. And they were pretty much, you know, right in my face, telling me that we had to leave. And if we did not leave, they would arrest me for trespassing, bring me to jail, impound my car. And I, you know, I wouldn't get to vote that day because I had not voted yet. And I stood my ground and I said, I would really like to actually talk to you about the law. And that's what you hear me saying repeatedly in the videos. And so at one point they kind of did a sneak attack and they knew I was recording. I don't think they knew I was going live, and they certainly didn't know who I was or that I had any kind of a following. So they, I think they thought it was just a recording that was no big deal. And so they grabbed my phone out of my hand. Well, no, they didn't even grab my phone out of my hands. That would have made me feel better about it not breaking. They were so aggressive with me. You can hear me at the beginning saying, can I at least set my phone down on the table? Just let me set my phone down. They wouldn't. And I was trying to say to them, you know, my child is in the car, and they weren't listening to me. And my key was in my pocket. So I was trying to ask, you know, trying to get my key so I could give it to one of my volunteers so they could have, you know, control over my daughter until, cause she was just in the car doing her schoolwork. It was, you know, 60 degrees. So it was nice, but it was a cool enough temperature. I wanted to keep her nice and warm in there while she was doing her schoolwork. And the car was facing, you know, it was backed in, so she could see everything where I was and what was happening to me the whole time. And so they didn't believe me. And then they were so aggressive with me that I have, I guess it's too bad this isn't by video, because I could show you the massive bruising that I have on several parts of me. And so not only that, but as these three grown men are manhandling me and dragging me towards the patrol vehicle, they, you can hear me screaming in the video that I don't want to hit my head and I just want them to let me sit in the vehicle, you know, like a normal human being would do, to sit down in a car. And like you see in all the cop shows, how a cop puts their hand over your head so you don't hit your head when you get in. Three grown men. That means six hands, and not a single one of them could be bothered to put their hand over my head so I didn't hit it getting into the car. And all of them are, you know, just finagling to literally throw me into this vehicle. And I was screaming in pain that they were hurting me, and I was begging them and pleading with them, please just let me sit in the vehicle. And you finally see one literally like pick up my legs and shove me into the vehicle and slam the door on me.
And yeah, it was shocking. It was like they were treating you like you were a dead body, that you weren't even living. I mean, it was like, you know, I found it shocking. And you know, on the video, if you go to the website, restorefreedomkh.com, you can see the feed. And she shows, Catherine, you show how your left forearm is all swollen and there are bruises on your right forearm.
Yeah. Yeah, my skin was actually cut up. There's still a little piece of, you could tell two chunks of skin that were basically removed on my left arm because of the handcuffs and the way they were squeezing me. I still have a big, contusion on my left arm and bruising all on my left arm. And my right arm, the wrist is, it's hurting. It's not as swollen, but it definitely hurts. And that evening, there were definite indications all the way around of the handcuff marks being that dug into my skin. And the bruising that I see now that I did not know I had that day, so it's not in that video. But I'm just looking at my own arm right now. You can clearly see the fingerprints of the officer on my upper right arm, and I mean, just huge. And it's big and blue and green now. And my right thigh, there's a huge bruise, bigger than a softball, and there's a big contusion in the middle of it. And my right knee is bruised up. My right elbow was sliced open and bleeding a little bit. That had been through my shirt. I had a long sleeve shirt on, and it still got cut up. So yeah, it it physically hurts, and it emotionally hurts because no one should be treated that way. Even if you have been alleged to commit, an actual crime, you should not be treated that way. And I say this as someone who has served as a public defender in two different states. Everyone has rights. We are innocent until proven guilty, and I was not endangering anyone. They were not even alleging I was endangering anyone. I was not endangering them. In fact, the irony is, if you want to say that I couldn't be there because I was disturbing the elections process at all, which I wasn't, while they had me in the back of this law enforcement vehicle, one of the deputies had to come up to the one, the main one that was, in the driver's seat of the vehicle. He talked through the passenger window and said to him, "Hey man, you're gonna have to move your vehicle because you're making a huge, traffic problem." And I turned around and looked, and sure enough, as I'm sitting there handcuffed in the back of this vehicle, there are, I don't know, roughly six vehicles that are all like trying to back out and pull into various parking spots at awkward angles, and they're all, having trouble doing so, all because this deputy decided that he would pull in and then park his vehicle at an angle of, basically a corner of this parking lot, blocking the flow of any kind of traffic whatsoever. And
So that
so,
was caught, but this was caught on tape, how they were actually blocking traffic to a polling place.
yes, yeah. I'm not sure how much of the traffic buildup was ever caught on video. It probably was. And certainly if anybody knows of any additional footage from that day, because there were several people out just out there to vote, voters in the on the other side of the parking lot from us, if anybody else caught video, we'd love to see that, because certainly what we could see so far is quite disturbing. And of course he then was saying, he gave me the final last opportunity to leave that day with misdemeanor charges. And keep in mind that this whole time I am being held in this car, I had asked for my water because I have a medical condition and I was finding it hard to breathe and to swallow. And I said, my special water that helps me with this medical condition, it's out on the table. I could see it right here, from here. Could you please allow me to drink it?" And he said, because I asked for water, that I was being difficult. And because I was being difficult, he was no longer going to move the handcuffs from the back of my body to the front of my body and or loosen them. And boy, did he get angry when he saw that the other two deputies later on had actually moved the handcuffs to the front of my body and handed me my water. And he also said, because I was being so difficult and wanted this water, that he was not going to allow me to call my husband And that once they, he went over to verify that I did in fact have my child in the car. And once he verified that, he came over and said that it, you know, basically that I was putting her in danger, and how dare I bring her to the situation knowing exactly what I was going to do, which, you know, was to try to educate him on what our constitutionally protected freedoms were in the instance. But he claims that I was endangering her by having her there. And so he was, he said, you know, we're bringing you to jail. And so we have people like this that are here to, you know, in the government that will just come and take your child. So we'll have CPS come and get her. And you're not allowed to call your husband to come and get her. And we'll have your vehicle impounded. And, you know, of course, you won't get to vote because you'll be in jail. And so.
Okay, what's the name of this officer? What is his name?
Langloy. I did not, he would not give me his badge number or his first name, but his name is Deputy Langloy.
Can you spell that? Because I want to look him up. We should be called. He needs to be fired.
Yep. Langlois. And Deputy Anderson was also part of this. And Deputy Bussell. Bussel.
Yeah, so he would. So this was a nameless, badgeless deputy.
Yeah, I specifically asked for the badge number in one of the parts of the video, I do believe, and he said, "No, you don't know. You don't need that. You have my name."
But you didn't have his name.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could only see his last name, but he said that was good enough. That's all I needed. So, and what's interesting is that they apparently, when some media outlets had contacted them about it, apparently they told the media that I was never arrested, that I was merely detained and given a fine. And I said, no, I was definitely arrested. I was forcefully thrown into the vehicle. I was in handcuffs. I have physical injuries from the assault that occurred. And I was issued a citation that have the misdemeanor charges. It was written on a form that says it's for civil infractions, but the statute number they wrote on there, 750.552, is actually a misdemeanor, up to 30 days in jail and a $250 fine. So really, if they wanted to mess with somebody that probably shouldn't have been a constitutional attorney who's done criminal defense work for more than a decade.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Unbelievable. No, it's just so shocking that they think they can bully their way and just through fear and intimidation. I mean, threatening CPS because you brought your child to a civics lesson on how, you know, we need to regain our basic human rights, civil rights in this country. And
no, he wasn't. That's not why. He said he was threatening to have, he was not threatening. He was telling me CPS was coming to get my child all because I was no longer allowed to have my husband come and get her because I was being difficult for asking for the water. That's why CPS was coming to get my child, he said. So
you were being difficult asking for water.
Yes. And I literally asked him, I said, I'm confused. I said, I'm not being argumentative. I'm not being a smartass. I seriously want to know, are you telling me that because I just asked you for water, that was me being difficult? And he said, yes. And I thought, I'm no longer in the United States of America. I don't even know how to respond to this. I have a medical condition. I can't even, you know, it's hard for me to swallow. It's hard for me to speak. It's documented. And he started to ask me what my medical condition was when I first told him. And when I started to tell him that I actually have multiple medical conditions and I was going to, you know, I didn't know what purpose he was asking the exact medical condition. So I was trying to explain that I have multiple medical conditions. He cut me off, and that's when he said I was just being difficult, and I could no longer call my husband. So because I wasn't allowed to call my husband to come and get my daughter, that's why he was going to call CPS. He said, yeah, well, you're going to jail, and since we can't have your husband come and get her, then, you know, we have people that do this all the time. We have government people that'll come and take her. So I was definitely traumatized, and you can tell in the video when they finally release me from the vehicle, I get out, I look at my, you see me looking at the ticket. I'm trying to figure out what all the charges are. I'm trying to figure out, you know, if I have any questions. The video doesn't quite show me, I don't think, asking the questions, but there was some handwriting that it's a carbon copy, what I was given. So it's hard to read some of the writing. And I was asking him on some of the letters and numbers and things like that. And he was very irritated with me and told me I just needed to leave. And you could see the demeanor on me. I look like a space cadet. I'm just like, hey guys, you know, we just need to go. I wasn't done, obviously. We were not in the wrong, but I needed to be able to talk to everyone. And he was still threatening, even as I was in my vehicle, while others were still not in their vehicles yet, he was threatening to arrest the other people that were there. Because in the meantime, I had, my husband did eventually show up, and two other people that are, you know, volunteers with me and friends of mine, they had noticed on my YouTube live video that I said I was being arrested for being at the polling precinct. So they had come over. And so, you know, we had those three plus the original three volunteers that were there. And then a couple of voters that had stuck around. And so he's threatening to arrest all these people for, you know, for being there and wanting to get signatures, and said that we, you know, everybody was trespassing because the county clerk or the township clerk didn't want us there.
Okay. So can you clarify, what's the name of the sheriff in the county that you were in?
Well, the county that it's not the county I live in, but the county where we were, it's Allegan County Sheriff. And I think it's Frank Baker is the name of the Allegan County Sheriff.
Okay.
And Frank, I actually spoke to him on the phone. While I was in the back, I had just, I hadn't received the criminal charges yet, but the deputy told me he was writing them up, and then said he had just realized somehow I was an attorney, and was discussing with me about what kind of an attorney I was, and if I worked for a big firm or if I worked for myself, and which I thought was really strange. So, and then he told me it wasn't personal, that none of this was personal. And right after that, he said that the sheriff had offered to speak with me on the phone if I had any questions. And I said, absolutely, I would love to talk to him, because it had been my understanding that my friend, who's a sheriff in a neighboring county, had actually been on the phone with his sheriff, and that his sheriff acknowledged that we had the right to be there as long as we were past the 100-foot mark. So I wanted to speak with his sheriff and see, you know, how that whole situation was allowed to transpire. So when I took him up on it, the deputy then seemed really frustrated. Like, it was almost like I called his bluff, you know? Uh-huh. And at any rate, he calls him. He gets out of the vehicle. I'm still handcuffed. He opens the back door. He, you know, has the sheriff on. He's talking to him a little bit for a minute in private, and then brings him over, puts him on speakerphone, and he says that it's the sheriff, his captain, and I believe he said the undersheriff, the third person. I don't remember exactly sure, you know, who it was, but I asked that question and about the communication, and the sheriff says to me, well, I think there was some miscommunication between you and Sheriff Darleaf and Dar and me, and then me back to Dar and Dar back to you. We did all communicate, but my understanding is that my original understanding was that you were, you know, within the 100 feet. And so, of course, that wouldn't be allowed. But now it's not a matter of election law. It's a matter of trespassing. And the township clerk says you can't be there. And I thought, I don't even know what to say. I mean, the fact that a sheriff would say, who took an oath of office, every single sheriff across the United States, Article 6 of the state or the U.S. Constitution says that every single law enforcement officer, judicial officer, executive, you know, official, they have to take an oath of office to defend the U.S. Constitution. And we have a similar provision in our state constitution. So this officer, this sheriff took an oath, and the deputies took an oath of office, and the township clerk, they all took an oath of office to uphold the Michigan and U.S. constitutions. And they don't even care what they say, let alone do they know. And it's at the whim of a township official who just whatever they want in that moment. And I thought, you have got to be kidding me that you think election law does not matter. And you're just going to lock me up and throw away the key.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, it really is. And I'm wondering, with the title company in that township, who the rightful owner of that property is. That would be interesting to explore, frankly.
Kathy Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out the kosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispico's. 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Listening to Immunize Wisely on the Republic Broadcasting Network with my esteemed guest, Catherine Henry, constitutional law attorney, who's working with the Restore Freedom Initiative. It's a petition to, you know, restore, get a constitutional amendment on the ballot so we don't have this kind of garbage ever happen again in the state of Michigan and the unconstitutional actions of their governor that continue, you know, in defiance of court orders, et cetera. So anyway, Catherine, I did have a couple questions. You mentioned the three deputies. I wrote down these names, Deputy Lang Lois, which is the most aggressive one that didn't have complete support, I don't think, maybe, but did from Anderson and Bussell. And then Frank Baker is the sheriff in Allegan County. And then you mentioned Durf or something?
Darleaf is a constitutional sheriff. He's from a neighboring county. He's a friend of mine, and I was actually on the phone with him when the initial situation was happening. So he heard what the what Deputy Langlois was saying to me initially, and so what he hung up, and then he was the one that initially called the Allegan County Sheriff Frank Baker directly to talk to him about the situation.
Okay, so I'm kind of assuming that sheriff is your sheriff in your county. Is that right?
No, I'm in Ottawa County, and Darleaf is the sheriff of Barrie County. It's neighboring county, but in the other direction.
Oh, okay. So this is all in the same general vicinity of Michigan.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have a map in front of me, and I'm not real familiar with Michigan. I've been near. I think the only place I think I've been was Ann Arbor, you know, the university town we dipped into one time, but, you know, long time ago. So I know it looks like a mitten, and that's about it. I know people in different areas, but it's all, you know, telephonically or snail mail like that. But anyhow, thanks for that clarification. I was just, you know, trying to get this all straight. You know, Frank Baker was the sheriff of Allegan County, the three deputies, and then they talked to Sheriff Darleaf in a neighboring county.
Yes. Yeah. He was trying to help clear up the situation because when he heard about the situation, like I said, he's a friend, and I was talking to him on the phone about a different matter. And he was surprised that the deputies were giving my volunteers a hard time. And so he had the clerk call the Michigan Secretary of State Department of Elections to double check with all kinds of the requirements and whatnot. And he verified that what I was saying is accurate. And so, you know, he wanted to say, you know, from one sheriff to another, hey, I've double checked this myself, you know, this is, you know, what we're looking at. And so that's what his involvement was.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Okay, we're at the end of the first hour. We're entering the second hour, and we'll announce the call-in line during the second hour. So stay tuned.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.